Good morning. You're listening to FloorDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, my guest is John Baugh, the managing director with Stiefel Nicholas. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kemp. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. It's good to talk to you. Now, all of the publicly traded flooring companies have reported in. It's a good time to catch up. Before we get into the individual ones, let's talk just briefly about the market. It looks like that 17, first half of the year, is looking a lot like 16, isn't it?
Yeah, the category performances are somewhat similar. The hard surface taking share still from soft surface and LVT growing. Overall numbers grinding our way up. It looks like residential is slightly outpacing commercial. I would describe it, Kemp, as good, not great, not terrible. We're in the ninth year of an economic recovery, so says GDP. Maybe not that long in the floor covering recovery, but we've had many years in a row where we're just kind of grinding our way up.
Yeah, I just got back from the Carpet One show out in Salt Lake City, and there are some people out there that are doing better. They're usually the bigger people. Overall, Carpet One, if you just had to average it out, probably about around a 3% growth, and carpet sales are down 3%.
Absolutely. Yeah, carpet's struggling to hold on. Some of the erosion we've seen in price per square yard with polyester coming on so strong, expensive nylon, but there is a preference for all of the hard surface looks and some of the performance characteristics that those products give you and versatility. Waterproof is a big deal. I'm seeing that now on the laminate side. Certainly yeah. That's an advantage of LVT. So a lot of trends there.
Yeah, and I tell you, the independent retailers are circling the wagons and deciding that if they're going to make it, they've got to be able to play this internet game. So they're trying to figure out the best way to do that. Well, let's go on and talk about the companies that have reported in. Let's start with Mohawk. There's not a whole lot to talk about there because they continue to do well. Their stock continues to go up. Their earnings rose compared to the same period last year, despite a slight decline in operating and pre-tax margin.
Yes, and the decline in margins relates to the beginning of the unwinding of the majority of their earnings, which has a very high margin attached to the revenue of the intellectual property in the inland side of the business where that patent expired. So half of that impact will be felt here kind of in calendar 17 and the remainder into 18. If you were to exclude that, you would see further margin expansion. You know, they're growing organically in that mid-single digit range, sort of 6%. That's probably a percent or two better than the trade, for sure. I think the number that jumps out at me, Kemp, is they increased their capital spend plan for 2017 to $850 million. There are not many floor covering companies in the world with revenues of $850 million. That's their capital spending, and to put that in perspective, you typically see a manufacturer spend 2, 3, 4% of revenue on capital spend. A huge shift, I think, in strategy, not so much acquiring, but expanding internally. So that's the number that jumps out at me.
All right, let me ask you about that. You know, that number's up $100 million from the beginning of the year. I think Jeff Loberbaum told us he was going to spend $750. Now it's $850. Your comment there about how they're going to do it. So you don't think the $850 will be buying another company? It's going to be more organic spending in certain areas?
Just because you've got a capital spend plan doesn't mean that you will or won't do an acquisition, which would be above that figure. Obviously, capital spending, you're not forecasting acquisitions, so okay. It's not included in that number. Now, I don't know whether that means that the targets there identified want too much money or they just can't identify targets. Presumably, when you do their return on invested capital analysis internally, you weigh internal expansion versus acquisitions, and clearly they're finding more opportunity or better return on the internal acquisition front currently. So, but that does not preclude the potential for acquisitions, and they've done a couple of small acquisitions, mostly outside the U.S. in the ceramic area.
You know, globally they're not as big as they are in this country. Do you think the government would allow them to acquire another U.S. company?
It depends, I guess, on who, and perhaps they'll look at the segment itself. It's always hard to decipher where the feds come out on looking at sub-product groups versus a whole industry group. But I don't think they're precluded from making an acquisition here, but it would probably be contingent on the target itself.
Yeah, let's go to Armstrong. They're probably the one that's got the most to talk about real quickly. Don Meyer himself even said in his release that he was disappointed in that he fell short of their expectations. Looks like their resilient business is down about 3% in revenue, and their wood business is down about 15%.
Yeah, the wood side, there are some timing related things with what happened last year. One of their home center customers had a fairly big product fill last year that didn't repeat, so that's probably not representative of where they are on a true run rate business on wood. But, you know, they are still down. The wood market's very competitive. Yeah, I think Armstrong, they talk about their businesses being sort of legacy versus non-legacy, and legacy is sort of code language for the old stuff, and what we've seen happen in too many situations is where they have been strong, Armstrong. So, for example, in the resilient sheet, they've been more felt-focused than fiberglass-back-focused. Yeah, we've seen fiberglass grow. In the wood side, we've seen solids shrink at the expense of engineered. Well, if you look at where historically they've been strong, they were stronger in solids. And you add on to this, of course, in the resilient sheet side, we've had added capacity, thank you, IBC and Beaulieu, at a time when overall sheet demand is likely negative, thank you, LVT. So it's been a combination of factors that have weighed on them. They do have some growth areas of the business, but they represent a minority piece of the pie.
Explain something to my listeners, if you don't mind. They're borrowing money to buy back shares. They've bought 516,000 shares at $9.5 million. Why does a company do that?
Clearly, they have a low valuation. Kind of gets back again to the returns on capital. If you don't identify opportunities, which is interesting, right? You got Mohawk stating, admittedly, it's global and it's in other product categories besides wood and resilient, but you got Mohawk committing $850 million of capital to new machines, new markets, new products, whatever. And then you got Armstrong buying in their stock. Don't deny their stock is very inexpensive, but you know, perhaps they're struggling a little bit to figure out where to deploy the capital. In the current mode, obviously, they're to some degree shrinking and liquidating, and that generates some cash, which, you know, they're choosing to redeploy in share repurchases. But, yeah, that's not a long-term builder of a business. It may be a smart financial decision. Their valuation is below half of what Mohawk's is.
I do need to point out they are still the largest in resilient and the largest in wood. And whether it's right or wrong, they bought Mannington's VCT business, so they're adding net revenue.
They are, and I think one last note on it, that they have hinted that they are looking at strategic options on their resilient sheet business. Clearly, they're not getting the returns there that they want. They took actions on the wood side of closing two factories. Don't know what they're looking at, but clearly the dynamics we talked about, where resilient sheet demand falling and capacity has increased, has put huge competitive pressures on their margins in that business. So they're looking how to extricate themselves and realize some value, great brand name, large position, as you said. So they do have some areas of strength there.
Interface real quick, Jay Gould says, we delivered a solid second quarter, was his quote. Not any surprises there. Their revenue up just a hair and their earnings up just a hair as well, right?
Yeah, I applaud them for exiting the floor retail business of all but maybe two locations. I think that refocuses the company on its core carpet tile and commercial business. Obviously, the LVT expansion continues. I think they're targeting around $25 million in revenue this year and maybe $50 million next year. There does seem to be some customer adoption to that. The question there has always been, in my mind, will it be accretive or incremental, or will it cannibalize? So far, so good on that question. So there's been some significant margin improvement at Interface. They're still in the middle of some plant reconfigurations down there towards LaGrange, which can yield some savings through time. Yeah, I think it's, you know, important time in their history, transitioning from the prior management team. And so far, I think they've done a good job. The order rates seem to have stabilized a little bit there. They do have big exposures in the UK and Europe. The UK, of course, has been challenged by Brexit. But overall, I applaud what they've done so far.
All three of these companies we've talked about are talking about a stronger second half, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess in my world, that's the goal. glass half full, and most management teams like to think that way. Heck, I like to think that way. Yeah. As we talked about at the outset, we're grinding our way up. Demand is okay, not great, not terrible. At least it's been a consistent, slightly upward trend.
Right. All right, let's talk just briefly, got just a couple seconds here, but when you start looking at these retailers, you've got two stories to tell here. Lumber Liquidators seems to have fixed their management team. They're buying more domestic goods, and their stock's going up. And then you've got the tile shop. It looks like their stock is dropping. What's a quick summary on that?
Yes, I guess the first thing I would say is the Wall Street volatility around quarterly earnings reports is the most extreme I've ever seen. And it seems like if you have a slightly good report, you could go up 20%. If you have a slightly bad report, you could go down 20%. So there's a lot of volatility around, as we call it, the print or the release of the quarterly earnings. Your Lumber Liquidators is now, 2 years removed, I think, from the 60 Minutes debacle. So things are starting to settle down in the media front. So I think that's probably good. Their store personnel, there's less turnover. They haven't completely resolved the legal issues in terms of settling on a financial amount. There's still a hefty bill to pay there, but I think they will be able to pay it. They broke even, made a little money actually in this latest quarter. I think that's the first quarter in 2+ years. There are some signs of improvement there, and they're talking about possibly starting their store expansion plans again into next year. So clearly more encouraging results. The tile shop, the old comp sale miss drove that stock down so precipitously. They've had, in the past, some uneven quarterly results, and that's what rocketed that stock.
All right, John, it was great to catch up with you. Thanks for giving our listeners a quick summary. You study this business and stay on top of it. Again, been talking to John Ball, Managing Director with Stifel Nicolaus, and you've been listening to Kemphar and Floridelli.net.